and Laughter and Coffee with Renee Bernard. Women's fiction, romance, and laughter.
Oh, my God.
Okay. We're having a little dance party over here.
This is going to be... All right, everybody. Okay. All right, welcome to Canned Laughter and Coffee with Renee Bernard, and I can already tell that this is going to be an historic show. I'm just going to say that right up front, because I don't know, this is the first time we've ever had guests calling in from the coat closet at the Yale Club, so welcome to Juliana Gray and Lauren Willig, who are right now, hiding in the ladies' room. I don't know, where are you?
We're actually in the Henry James room.
The Henry James room in the Yale Library. We may be interrupted by a drunken class of 90, or class of 65. At some point, they've got quickly.
So it's okay.
Exactly. We can beat them away with our romance novels.
However, we have been paired by the Yale Club G&G, which is about 90% G and 10% T.
Exactly. So, you know, we'll see how this goes.
They're
bringing the cognac halfway through, aren't they, right?
I love it. I think if you say the word romance, it does tend to drive those nine, you know, they will turn and run. So I think that'll be a good...
They secretly want it.
They're drawn to it, and yet, yeah, a little bit scary.
A little bit scary. Well, I'll tell you something. We have just come out of a meeting of the New York Drones Club.
The P.G. Woodhouse fanciers of New York.
Yes,
thank you, because drones, I'm thinking that could be Star Wars, that could be, you know, I don't know, that could be anything.
These are not the drones you're looking for.
These are not the drones you're looking for, exactly. No, they're a lovely group of gentlemen. My father-in-law is one of them, which is why we were there.
Darling.
And he is wonderful. And so they meet every month or two and talk about... Well, actually, they're supposed to talk about P.G. Woodhouse, but they talk about
everything else.
I know. But they knew that we were coming in for this dinner, and so one of them, and this wonderful gentleman with a bow tie and wire-rimmed glasses, and he's been spending the summer reading romance novels in order to properly prepare himself for this dinner.
Well, he's done the whole thing.
Oh, my God.
He went all the way from Regency Romance
on the subway.
British Chiclet.
Yeah. So he was on the subway with my book, with a strumpet never lies on the cover.
called A Lady Never Lies.
Exactly, A Lady Never Lies. But you know, she's reclining in her blue satin black
lace edged corset, as one does.
One has rented a villa in Italy.
Exactly, and to do that on a New York City subway
as
a man with a bow tie and wire rimmed glasses, I think takes a lot of guts.
Well, especially if he's wearing
blue rimmed
corset.
I think we should just applaud. Exactly.
That's huge.
Man. I mean, that's a man for you. So
he
made the
real
ultimate
man.
Guy. I know.
Wow. Exactly.
But yeah, he actually talked pretty knowledgeably about.
Yes, he.
You know, I was
impressed. You do have male hooks in the book. There's a whole automotive angle.
There is, yes, there is the sort of early automobile thing, and so you've got this competition between steam engines and electric engines and gasoline-powered engines. So
I have, in fact, dined out now with male friends, including my father-in-law, on the whole, did you know there were different types of engines that were competing, all of which I learned about purely from A Lady Never Lies.
Exactly.
I'm making a note of that. Romance meets Top Gear. I'm just going to,
Exactly. I know, and we do have a historically, important event that takes place at the very end of the book, which I shall not reveal.
That
but
someone whose daughter is named Mercedes.
Exactly. So, I like to say we're breaking new ground with this book.
Or at least covering it rapidly.
Or at least, something. That's fabulous. You guys actually docked them into this. And
yes.
They had gone into it without us. I think we're just the excuse.
I think we were an excuse. They had all read it. I mean, they were asking very knowledgeable questions about sex scenes. And I know, which was a little awkward.
I was going to say, how did you handle that? If your father-in-law is right there, and I'm sure he's very proud, but there's all this other, how do you,
and when I first sent him the book, I felt a little awkward. I was like, don't read page 118 or whatever it is, but then I thought, hey,
yeah.
or, you know, there, you know, my... my own father has read this book.
We were joking about this. My mother-in-law has now read them in German, and I shudder to think of what they sound like in German.
I know, really.
What the terms are.
I know. And, well, I mean, vocabulary is always an issue. But,
right, yeah.
You know.
A great deal of phlegm.
Exactly.
I never thought of that. No, no. Yeah, there's just a whole different term. Yeah, it was a different,
yeah.
A different flavor.
Exactly. Mm. How do you sound romantic saying, I don't know, I mean.
Well, I mean, that, yeah, like,
I know,
yeah, but
I know.
There are some languages that are intrinsically, like if you just say, please take out the garbage, or I think you have something on your nose, it sounds fabulously sexy.
Yeah, like Italian, for example.
Yes.
Or a very good BBC accent where you can get away with anything.
Yeah, if you say it with an English accent, you can get away
with
a lot.
But it depends on the type of English accent. Cockney gets you nowhere.
Yeah.
Do British men know this, though? Do you think that there are, like, do you think they know? I don't think they, do they know? Do they know that there's an untapped well of American goodwill on this side? I mean, do they realize?
Some do, but some truly do not. I mean, I would say, I mean, they do play the English gentleman card, and I would say it's definitely a card because it's really, truly, it's truly 100% based on the accent. And what is it about it?
And this weird air of authority that comes with it.
Yeah, exactly.
This innate deference towards
we're
the other
hypnotized.
Countries.
We're like little birds. We're just hypnotized.
Exactly.
And they don't know. I have a friend who's English, and he's like, oh, no, my accent is wretched. And I'm like, well, I can't. I'm sorry.
Again.
I can't hear what you're saying.
Say
because,
one more time.
Yeah. Could you just say that again?
Wretched. Oh, God, yes. Yeah. I don't know what it is. And it's funny because Hollywood always, I mean, if you notice the villain in any movie, always has a British accent.
Yeah.
Have you noticed that?
Yes.
And
well, there was a few groups that still safe to vilify.
Exactly. You can, because they sound so smart and yet so cold. So it's kind of the perfect villain. But do these male screenwriters realize as they're writing their British villains that it's actually the women in the audience are like, oh, really?
Well, especially when you get the villain played by Sean Bean.
I know.
Hero.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's the Mr. Bean. I would. Yes. I'm sorry. I drifted. I'm focused.
I think
it's
all.
Yeah. At a moment.
He plays such good villains.
Well, I'll tell you. I was halfway through writing A Lady Never Lies, and I was like, I'm definitely writing about somebody. Who am I writing? And halfway through, I realized that it was Paul Bettany. Because he's tall, and he's incredibly intelligent, and he's red-haired. And, you know, he's just got that, like, genius mojo, you know, that I know. And I'm like,
could send him an email.
Well, there you go.
You send him an email? You send him a copy of the book? Yeah, sign a little copy of the book and say, I thought of you.
I know.
I was writing this, and I thought of you.
I know, so now I feel an odd connection, you know, with him, and it would probably completely creep him out, but, you know, I feel like, hey, Paul, we get each other, right, you know?
Yeah, that's always a great, moment when you get your first restraining order, you know, I mean, I know you're debuting now, and this is huge, and, you know, it's your first restraining order, I think,
It's an important milestone as an author, really.
Well, yeah, everyone's first restraining order is important.
Such thing as bad publicity. You know,
exactly.
I think you should go for it.
I mean, how on earth issues these like candy?
Yeah, exactly. You know,
I
need to write a Colin Firth character.
No, that's so done at this point. He's now playing fathers and uncles.
I know, which is, you know, it just feels awkward to me because
it is awkward, isn't it? Yeah. But a sexy fathers and uncles still.
Yeah, exactly. You can get.
I'm sorry, but
I know exactly. You know, you can get your perv on and all that. Yeah.
He'd be flattered. You know, he might be flattered that he was still in the hero. You know, that you still thought of him that way.
Oh, the poor man. You know, he probably. Wherever he goes, he's like, someone, you know, this woman will walk up to him and sort of be like, could you jump in that lake for me, please? And then walk out of it, please, and I'll take your picture.
Darcy.
Oh, my God. Freak.
Only in England, yeah. Although, you know, when you look at it, though, really, the physique wasn't all that in a bag of chips, but that wasn't the point. That
was
not the point.
He had that down. You know where he got me? The look he gave Elizabeth in the scene where she's playing the piano with Georgiana. And he gives her that look where she, you know, where there's that moment of awkwardness with Georgiana and she sort of smooths it over. And he gives her this look like, I love you, babe. And it's like, oh, man.
You know, those little
true.
Cheer in her heart, persuasion, that bit where he puts his hand on the back of, you know, on the small man's back when he helps her into the carriage.
Well, it's true. I think it's the stuff that is not overtly sexy that really ends up being the sexiest.
It's all about the sexual.
I agree.
Yes. Yes.
I agree.
Especially in a society where you don't have a lot of contact between men and women, the slightest contact takes on this this huge meaning.
Deeply charged.
Exactly. And in some ways it's hard to pull off as a modern novelist because we get inundated by sex scenes and and it's this sort of arms race. You know, who can create the sexiest sex scene can go
it's
erotic. But really so you feel like you're sort of caught up in this thing, you sort of forget how important it is.
Things were actually the things that never happened.
Exactly.
It's the almost
exactly. Yes. No, you get caught up in the whole shock and awe. And I think I've talked to other authors about how it's like one up, and it's like I think we lose a little. And
we
think that you can strategically apply sexual tension and and get a lot more traction than if it's just all
out,
over the head.
For reading these things as a teenager, the most chilling thing was always the closed connecting door on the wedding night.
Yes,
and you just like, wait, when it's open.
Well, Barbara Cartland, guys, it was the spiritual kiss at the end of the book. Remember that?
Exactly.
Yeah.
The Victoria Holt novels, I remember until I was in, like, seventh grade, I thought you were supposed to slap the guy the first time he kissed you.
Well,
I was younger.
Wait, you weren't supposed to do that.
Oh, try. No wonder I didn't get a date for this problem.
And personal information is once again revealed on Canned Laughter and Coffee.
Can I have a do-over? Because
no, but you can have another G&T. And no, this is so great of you guys to come on together. And this is just so cool. And
Lauren and I connected. Gosh, back at RWA in Anaheim. No, in Orlando.
The other Disney one.
And we randomly sat at a table together, and I said, wait, hi, Lauren. I think we're in the same RWA chapter, the New York City chapter. And we ended up talking about how come there are so many gorgeous dukes in Regency England. How is that statistically even possible? Exactly. They're all tall and dark-haired and commanding.
And they have all their teeth.
What a quinky-dink,
It's a clone factory of dukes.
Exactly. So we had this great conversation.
It's like the strategic man reserve.
Exactly. So we just kind of ended up connecting, and then
Beatrice told me she had this World War One romance.
This is under my real name, Beatrice Williams, and it was my first book coming out. It was called Overseas, and I said sort of a year later. So anyway, we met a year ago, and I told you about my book a year ago.
Making fun of some of the sillier titles.
There were some great titles. Yeah. What was a dead sexy knitting? I was like, I need that title. Who came up with it? Who comes up with these great titles? That is probably like all time. It should be a read-it for best title.
And I will admit there may have been some gowns.
There should be. Just a best title. Just a, best title, worst cover. I think it's... We got to come up with the award to be extra fun.
How about as part of the award?
Best title.
I mean, the technical awards and the Oscars?
Yeah, like the technical awards and the Oscars.
Yes. Oh, Steve, we've revolutionized the industry right here. This is it. Guys, believe it or not, that's about it. And I forgot to mention, let's see, it's www.julianagray.com. And A Lady Never Lies. A Lady Never Lies. And I'm sorry. I just am laughing so hard my face hurts. Okay, and then it's www.laurenwillig.com, and that's WILLIG.com. And, anybody who calls me from a Coke closet, and I'm just excited.
A book-lined Coke closet, I should add.
Yes,
very venerable books. History of the Class of 1938, Yale University. Actually, my next book as Beatrice Williams is set in 1938, so I think that's a good omen.
It's a good omen. It's a sign. It's a sign.
There you go.
All right, everybody. Good night. Thank you for joining us,
ladies.
Good night. And
thanks for having us.
All our listeners, this has been so much fun. Okay, everybody, join us next Tuesday for more canned laughter and coffee, and run out and buy their books, everybody, just right now. Okay, good night.
Good night.
Good night.
This show brought to you by Circle of Seven Productions, www.cosproductions.com. Please be sure to subscribe and welcome to our circle.